Hello, and welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. On this episode, we are really excited. We have Molly Bonner. He's a vocal director and now filmmaker, whose first feature film, Green Flake, chronicles the life of a Black Mormon pioneer who literally paved the way for 70,000 members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to journey west, where they settled in what is now, what was then the Utah Territory, which is now the state of Utah. And Molly, thank you very much for joining us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
So we
I'm very excited. See, I was raised LDS, so this is actually really interesting.
Ooh.
Yeah. So we have more. Jason and I will come at this from a little different
angle. Yeah, yeah.
So first of all, tell me a little about yourself. You are a vocal coach, so you do a lot of things, actually. You got a multi-talented thing going here.
Well, listen, my thing is developing pop artists. That's what I've been doing for like 18 years in L.A. So kids you hear on the radio, the Ariana Grande, Camila Cabello, Kesha, Prince Royce. So those are artists I develop and prepare them for their tours or their recordings.
Okay.
So, I mean, okay, then the other thing is you are LDS.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Were you raised LDS?
Yeah, okay. So my parents, they were serving a Baptist mission in West Liberia, in Liberia. So they basically finished their Baptist mission. They came west, or at least that's what they felt. They prayed, we got to go west. So they left the mission, went to Las Vegas, were down to their last few bucks. A couple of missionaries showed up and were like, hey, you guys need help? And they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that was kind of the introduction to the church. And I was in my mom's belly at the time. So I've been a member my whole life. They converted the same year I was born.
Las Vegas, by the way.
Converted in the womb.
Exactly.
Las Vegas is a Mormon settlement. Everybody should know that. I found that out later on in history.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So how old are you, Molly?
I'm 39.
Okay. And so he's African-American. So this jump from being, you know, traditional Baptist is kind of big among the blacks.
Yes.
As I would. Then
kind of
to go to a different kind of
Christianity.
It's Christianity, yeah. Right. Yeah. So how does that
It's
affect
a less
you?
Effusive type of Christianity.
Yeah.
Would you get me on that?
Yes, yes. Okay, well, my mom, you know, she grew up singing in the gospel choir growing up and whatever else. So even though her and my dad believed in the church and believed like, oh, this is Christ's church, we need to be baptized, my mom still said, but I got to go get Jesus. And so we would do both.
Mm-hmm.
So we would go to, we'd sing in the gospel choir and we'd go to church because my mom still was ingrained in her culture.
Yeah.
And she brought that to us.
And there is a Mormon culture. I know people debate this all the time, but I was raised LDS. My mom is LDS and I have a pioneer ancestor I have researched.
That's cool.
I actually spoke about her on a different podcast, a woman. And so for me, your movie was, I loved it, right? But first, my very first question is, how did you hear about this story? Because you were not a filmmaker before this. Like, that wasn't your aspiration, right?
No, not. I never even thought of, dreamed of, you know, never even. But it was in 2018, my family, the Bonner family, was asked to sing at the B1 celebration where it was commemorating the 40th anniversary to the priesthood ban being lifted, right?
So, priesthood ban?
So basically, black folks getting the priesthood again.
Yeah,
was
well,
basically what that was.
And you say again, so I had this experience as a 10-year-old kid in the church where I'm watching General Conference and a black man gets up and starts playing piano and singing basically gospel music, thanking Jesus for the opportunity to have the priesthood. And I turned to my mom and said, help me, what do you mean he can't have, he's just getting the priesthood now? He's like, oh, you know, he's an old man. And she said, well, you know, blacks couldn't hold the priesthood. And I was like, wait, hold on, time out. What is this? I did not know that until I was 10.
Yes.
And it is a point of contention for a lot of LDS people that they had this. And it was a not a drop policy. So if you had any black ancestry, you could not be a member of the church. And
yeah.
This was an absolute... It was a really difficult thing for me as a kid. I wrote the prophet of the church. He was Spencer W. Kimball at the time, repeatedly about this. And that's one of the aspects of your film that I loved.
Right.
There was another gentleman who did the same thing. And I was
yes.
like, see, it should bother you so much, your petition in the prophet for a change. But it is a really difficult thing for people in the church and out of it and people who've left the church to even discuss, because there are a lot of people who say, why would you want to be in a church if you couldn't be a full-fledged member, right? Because
yes.
you are not a black man, cannot be hold the priesthood. Now, let's just say only men can hold the priesthood.
Right.
Women can have.
So there is misogyny and, you know, racism involved in it.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that's what it looks like, right? From
yes,
the outside.
Yes.
So you've dealt with this. As, yes. And whenever white people meet a black Mormon, they're like, help me with this. How do you reconcile this?
And
yes.
I read an article. Please explain your answer. Because it's great.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I don't know what my answer was then or what I said. So you tell me if what.
Well, it's go ahead. I'll tell you if it's.
Yeah. Okay, sure. So for me, it's not about the people, the policy, the anything. It's about Christ for me. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, there's going to be things that come down the pipeline that I'm going to disagree with from here on the rest of my life. Guaranteed. Mm-hmm. But I believe that this is Christ's restored gospel of Jesus Christ. And regardless of Peter denying him then, mm-hmm. I'm still going to be Christian. Mm-hmm. Even though people have done and said things and made adjustments to what Christ set in place, I'm not leaving because of John or Mary. I'm staying because of Christ, and that's it. That's not negotiable for me.
You, the thing I read in the article that
yes.
Lee Benson wrote a while back was your analogy was blacks in slavery and being Americans.
Yeah.
And the idea is that I am an American, and America has a very checkered past, and in fact, its inception was made me the antagonist and my ancestors slaves. However, I am not leaving America.
Right.
I still am a full-fledged citizen, and for that.
And you still believe in the promise of America.
I believe in most of that, but I'm also a pragmatist.
On good days.
And I recognize that we still have a long way to go,
yeah.
but it's still my country. That made all the sense in the world to me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, because I'm like her. I was one of those people who, like, I don't get this whole thing with the blacks in the Mormon church.
Mm-hmm.
I do now.
I will right. say, Jason's asked me this.
Thank you, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's asked me this before. Like, why did you start reading black authors? This is why, right? Like, this is one of the reasons. I had a teacher that recommended a book, but also I had this conflict in my heart about this church that my mom was a very faithful member of and loved very much. And I, you know, as a little kid, I don't know that you know what you believe, but like it felt good to go to church and I enjoyed church. But I also felt like this was a bad thing.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? I had trouble reconciling it, and it wasn't something that people talked about.
Right.
It, like, you didn't go to primary and learn about black pioneers.
Right.
So when you were going through this and, you know, again, this is your church, how do you make that journey through? Because there's got to be a lot of, there's some conflict at least. And then when you meet other members of the church, how did they receive you?
As a member, as a black member of the church?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, well, It's the majority, perfectly fine, great, fantastic. But of course, there's always those few, you know. And the problem, though, is without this history being public knowledge and everybody knowing it, then you have people in leadership trying to fill in the holes. Mm-hmm. So it could be a teacher, a seminary teacher, a someone who's teaching a class to the youth who doesn't know the history of the church. And so because of that, he's filling in, well, then why blacks couldn't? And this is why. Mm-hmm. And then they're teaching things that aren't doctrine.
Which I will say happened in my lifetime in
yeah.
the 70s, that there was a little freelance going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it led to some serious problems.
Mm-hmm.
So, but how did you hear about Green Flake? Because you want me to make me wait?
Well, so we're going to have to come back.
Yes.
Because this whole Green Flake thing.
We're so excited.
We
if
really
you can't
are,
tell.
We
love this movie. We love
and
this story.
I still don't believe this is your first time making a movie.
Yeah.
It is. He did such a good job that I'm just fascinated as to how somebody can learn to do this, and you did it in such a relatively expeditious amount of time.
Wow.
We are speaking today with Mally Bonner. He is a first-time filmmaker, but generally speaking, he is a vocal director in Southern California, and he made a movie called Green Flake about black pioneers journeying west to Utah. And there is a wonderful history to be learned from that. We'll continue our discussion when we come back. You're listening to Voices of Reason. We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, speaking today with Mally Bonner, a vocal director and now filmmaker, whose film Green Flake chronicles black pioneers and their role in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints members
We should say their critical role.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
critical
the thing. Role. So I want to know how you found out about this guy.
Yes. So it was at the B1 celebration.
Mm-hmm. What's B1?
B1. It was the celebrating the 40th anniversary for the priesthood ban being lifted from people of African descent. And our family was asked to sing. We sang at it. They had information on a few early black pioneers. And these are things that I didn't know. And so I'm sitting here like, there were
black pioneers. So
This is just 3 years ago. I knew nothing 3 years ago. And as I was learning these things, I realized I became instantly embarrassed. Like, here I am, black in the church, and I don't know any of this. If somebody asked me, if you asked me, so why so black something, something church, I'd be like, I don't know. That's embarrassing. And I was like, I need to take the time to learn, find out, know, because as I was learning those things, it just changed me. Like instantaneous changed me. So I just dove in, started meeting with historians, and they were so generous with their time. And I was just reading and writing and sending me books and then my list of questions. And they'd sit with me and go through all my questions. So it was awesome.
How long was this period that you did that research and got that knowledge?
Okay, so I don't know how this film happened, to be honest. I feel like
saying 3 years and I feel like a complete failure in life.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. So in June was the B1 celebration. In July, I began meeting with historians.
This is
2018. In August, I began writing. So as I was reading, I was writing songs. I'm a songwriter. Mm-hmm. And so I would write songs. So I wrote the soundtrack before the film.
Okay, that makes sense on the music. Because mm-hmm. the music is so unique.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And so I wrote the soundtrack. And then through August to September, I wrote the script. So September, I was like, I didn't write the script to write a script. I just had 200 pages of things I was writing.
And so you didn't even, as you were making these, chronicling this, you had no idea you were going to make a film?
No, I had no plan to. It was just to help me cope and deal with the information. So I'm just sitting here sobbing, reading, learning these things.
So this is a journal, essentially.
Exactly. But I was like, man, I think this is a movie. And then I was like, this is a movie. And then right away, it was like, you have to make this movie, is what I felt like. Because you would think that me learning all this information and like, what? LDS members were enslaving other LDS members? That's the way I saw it, you know? Like, church members enslaving other church members? What?
But that is, that's true.
Yes,
yeah.
And you would think that it would rock my belief system. Mm-hmm. Or be like, oh, I'm done, I'm out. But it didn't. For whatever reason, learning all these things strengthened me.
Baptists own Baptists.
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean, if we want to be real,
yes,
but
did black Baptists own black Baptists? There's a bit of a difference there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Were there black slave owners in the church?
Oh, not in the church. No.
No.
Okay.
No. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So I understand what you're saying, but it's
saying black Baptists are different than white Baptists.
No, I'm saying they're all this. Oh. I mean, they're kind of the same.
I'm just saying that I think people seek religion regardless of the circumstance they're in. They seek answers from God.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that's universally misunderstood.
Yes.
When you look at this through the lens of like a secular, like not understanding why you would want to be in an organization that that didn't give you the same sort of rights and privileges,
yes.
Right?
Yes,
but,
yes.
But, you know, your analogy is great about America because, you know, look at us.
Yeah, yeah.
As you're writing, when you determine, oh, this is a film, You don't have any experience. How did you decide that you were going to be the person to make this film?
I just decided. You know, it literally was as simple as, oh, this is a movie. Okay, I'm going to make this movie and I got to make it fast because if people learn this information, if you heard all this information in a different way than you heard it, than you saw it in the film, mm-hmm. you would feel very differently about everything that you learned. And I just wanted people to have the same opportunity to feel the feels that I did as I was learning, rather than just one Google line from somebody mm-hmm. as they looked up whatever. And so 3 months later, we were shooting the film 3 months later. So we were going fast. And because I didn't know, because I wasn't a filmmaker, director, producer, no, what? Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know what the limitations were. So to me, in 3 months shooting, that makes sense. Even though other filmmakers are like, okay, listen, they'd laugh. Like, that's not the way it works. And I'm like, listen, I'm not asking you if it's possible. I'm just asking you if you're going to be in or not. So So not knowing what I was doing was the best part of this whole experience.
How were you able to raise the money to actually do it?
Friends and family. Friends and family.
They bought into that idea?
They bought into me.
Yeah.
My man.
Yeah. So that, and so that, I really appreciate them. They, and literally they said that, you know, it's.
But were you talking to your family and saying, hey, did you know there were Black pioneers?
No. So as I was learning things, I was letting them know. Some of them knew more than I did, mm-hmm. you know, but, you know, the little money that we got to make this film, because most people who are involved in the film that you saw were doing it without expecting to be paid anything. As I called them, I was like, this is what happened. And here's the script. Just check it out. Alex, read it. Just mm-hmm. read it. You know, mm-hmm. Casey, will you read it? And then just tell me if you're in. And literally everybody, every single person I called was like, I'm in. You tell me when and where I'm in.
About how much did it cost you to make this film?
It cost me about, oh, I can't say it.
Oh.
Yeah, darn it.
Was it more or less than six figures?
It was more.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it cost a little money, but you still are not a filmmaker. So when it came down to the nitty gritty and you're ready to do this, how do you, and again, folks, Amy and I have seen this. There is no way this was his first film. If you watch it, if nobody told you, you would never have believed that this is his first effort. I kid you not. It was spectacular the way you did this.
Wow.
Because it felt like any movie I've ever seen.
Wow.
Seriously. So when you're doing that and you're going through this creative process, how do you summon the creativity to be a director, to be the person telling folks where to go, to develop the scenes and then go to the locations? How do you figure all of that out?
Oh, you know what's so funny? Is prior to filming, up until the day before I was filming, I guess I was quote unquote producing, getting the people together, getting the location. Here's the budget, booking the hotels, send me your info.
You're doing the work. You just don't know the label.
Yeah, until the night before. And I was like, I was about to go to bed and it was late. It was like 2 a.m. And I was like, I had to be at set at 6 a.m. And I'm like, whew. I'm like, wait a second. I'm the director? It just dawned on me that the next day I was going to have to direct the film. I knew nothing. I hadn't thought about it. So I was on YouTube. How to direct. When to say action.
What
when
do
to
we
say,
ever do before YouTube?
When to say action. When to say cut. Literally the night before. So we get to set. And they're doing the thing, rolling, something, sound, something, blah, marker. And I'm just sitting there waiting. And it's quiet, 15 seconds, 30 seconds. And then first AD comes over, texts me, it's on you, sir. I'm like, oh, okay, cut. This is not going to work. Okay, so you say action. I'll say stop. And so I had to make it to where it was the way I wanted it to roll because I don't know the verbiage, the language, you know, whatever else. But what I do know is directing people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know the story.
Yes.
So we're going to come back, and I want to have you give me a little bit more of this process and the filmmaking, and then explain a little bit about the story as much as you can without giving too much away.
Well, I want to know why you focused on Green Flake.
Yeah.
And Green Flake, because he was an amazing character.
And I need to know if he's related to Jeff Flake's family.
He has to be. I was just going to – that's the first thing I thought of. We'll talk about that and more when we come back with Molly
Bonner.
So
many things.
There's just so many questions we have. She's Amy. I'm Jason. This is Voices of Reason. We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson. We're speaking today with Molly Bonner, who is a vocal director by trade. He teaches people how to sing and become artists in the music business. But on a whim, after a history lesson that in some ways changed your life,
yeah,
the way you think about your faith and learning that history inspired him to make a film about a gentleman whose name was Green Flake. Seriously, it's G-R-E-E-N, last name Flake. And Amy and I have been wondering if he was related to the Flakes
now,
of Arizona. But
yes, I now am going to make that a mission to find out if he's related.
That's right.
Yeah, I wouldn't
to
doubt
the,
it.
To the his last name comes from the guy who owned him.
Which mm-hmm. is generally, that's how we would come up with that. Mm-hmm. So you were explaining to us that you dive into the process of making the film.
Yes.
And you weren't sure how to be a director, right?
Right.
Now, what's interesting to me is it seems like you found people who had some experience in the filmmaking process that helped you along. Is that fair
absolutely,
to say?
Absolutely. Like, you know, I can't sit here and say, well, no, there were people who were great at what they do and were empowered to do what they know how, mm-hmm. you know? So, Yes, I did direct the film, but what a great cinematographer we had. My first AD was everything to me. He was teaching me along the way, you know, to where I could focus on my actors and making sure that they gave me the story that was written. Mm-hmm. And so it was a team effort from the beginning to the end, for sure.
So why Green Flake story, you know, because obviously you're researching this and you're finding that there were a number of black pioneers. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the final number comes up to, but why did you focus on him?
Well, it's a spiritual thing, to be honest. It wasn't about him when I initially was writing. It was about Elijah Abel, who's someone that more people know about.
Yeah.
And
But tell us who Elijah Abel
is. So Elijah Abel, so he's the character who was wanted to talk about the priesthood, had the book, and like had some things to say in the film. Yeah. So Elijah Abel was an early black pioneer, one of the first black priesthood holders in the church.
One of the first black members of the church and a confidant to Joseph Smith.
Yeah. Cormorant of the 70s. So he was used widely from Joseph Smith, sending him on multiple missions, doing some difficult things, baptizing some prominent white men. You know, so this is Elijah Abel. So there's a lot more written on him than Green Flake.
And he had the priesthood.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until one night I don't even tell the story because if you're not spiritual, it's kind of like, okay, but I felt the presence of Green Flake. And I was like, Green Flake? And I remember reading the name in one of the things I was reading, one of the journals, but that was not who the film was about. But over time, it was very clear that my focus needed to be Green Flake. So I just switched. And this is after 100 and something pages on Elijah Abel. Vroom, up in the air, and it switched to Green Flake. And so,
So you switched to Green Flake because why?
Because I felt his presence. And Brigham Young. I was like, there's a connection between them, and I don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know the history. I didn't know that at the time that Brigham Young was going to become ill at winter quarters and send Green Flake to lead the trek on. And then that Brigham Young would be the one who was orchestrating the emancipation of Green Flake and his family right before Utah became a slave state. I didn't know these things at the time, but I just knew this is about Brigham Young and Green Flake. Okay, so let's find what we can find.
I'm going to interrupt you to say, yes. I just loved, so I don't practice, but
yes.
You know, I have affection for my being raised LDS. I think
yes.
It gave me a wonderful foundation for I am a very spiritual person, and I just cherish my time in the church. And my mom is still very active LDS, and we talk about God and religion almost every day.
Yes.
So, in fact, I told her about your film this morning. And she's like, how can I watch it? But because I think there is, among some members, a real thirst for a more accurate and inclusive history of the church. So I'm watching it. And, you know, my expectations were low when he told me this was your first film. And I had the same reaction he did, was like, he had help. There's no way. This dude cheated.
Seriously, it makes no sense to me because this is his first film.
Starting with the musical score that you are hit with right out of the gate, right? It's a real gut punch. I loved so many aspects of it, including the focus on family, which is an LDS, sort of the foundational principle of the LDS church, is this idea that family is at the core of your salvation. And I love that aspect of it. But I thought what you did that so well was I didn't know if you were Mormon, if you were active, how you felt about these people. I felt like it was as a journalist, I appreciated this sort of very fair but emotional. I was connected emotionally to these people, but I did not feel judgmental about their decisions, right?
I really appreciate you saying that because I just wanted to bring to the attention the human beings behind the story and allow people to have their own experience as they're watching their own thoughts and feelings and whatever, let them go. Each person should be able to go where they want to go during the film. But at least what they will feel is the human beings behind these stories and how relevant their story is to them. Even though you, all of us were never enslaved, but we felt so connected to them.
Yeah.
In that film, and that's what I wanted.
So when we look at this, Green Flake, to me, I mean, obviously he's the protagonist, and he's this heroic character, and you have to have been heroic to do what they did. I mean, all of them, right?
Yeah,
uncharted territory across mountains and just horrific weather, and it was just, you love that part about
without winter clothing.
Without any of that.
Yes.
And he did it twice. So I wanted to get a sense of how did you choose your brother to do this? He was great, by the way.
Thank you.
Was your brother Flagrant Plague?
Yes, that's, see, that's my little brother.
Know.
Yes,
your little brother.
Nothing little about that dude.
I know. Yeah. I know.
I'll be honest with you. When I first saw that character, like, where did he find this guy? Because if Green Flake was anything like that, there's this power.
He's a mountain of a
he's
man.
He's a mountain
yeah.
of a guy whose strength, but he's still gentle, yet he's tough as nails.
Yep.
I mean, how did you develop that character?
I mean, so the bits that I've read, and they're just bits, you know, and then my brother, we grew up fighting every day. I'm 4 years
you
older than my brother. No, I have him by 4 years.
Yeah.
So I
so
grew
it took
up,
a while.
Yes.
Okay.
But he just would never quit. He was always coming at me, never quitting, never. Every day we fought. And I just knew that he was Green Flake. And he had a little bit of experience acting. You know, he had never done a film or any of that, you know, but he's an incredible public speaker. Like, I know he's comfortable with camera and being able
Remember
to do whatever.
Remember your brother's
name? Yehosh. Okay. Yehosh. And so, you know.
Was that his voice that narrates him?
That was his. Yeah. Yeah. It was his voice. And so, you know, for example, there was just things that I knew that I needed to do that I couldn't ask an actor to do. Fall down the side of this mountain. I can't ask anybody to wear these rags for about 3 hours. Your fingers are frozen. Okay. You know, like I can't ask that for an actor, you know. And then the fight scene with him and I wanted it to be a real fight scene. And so literally we went down the basement. He brought his boy over. We're like, okay, punch, punch, dodge. Cool. And then after that is free game. And whoever wins, wins was our deal. And so that we could really just
and the
go for
and
it.
The fight scene made me sick. And that actually was where I thought, oh, do I want to watch this? Because I will say I felt this way when I watched 12 Years a Slave.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't, you know, it's hard, but I also feel like I don't want people to be reduced to their circumstance.
Yes.
And I think one of the things you did so beautifully was to say people are not what's happening to them, right? And you have some beautiful lines in there that illustrate that. But I think more so was how they talked to each other, how they treated each other, how they behaved under pretty crappy circumstances at times.
Yeah.
I thought that was it made it so a person like me could because it's hard, and I bet it's emotional to know those. Like, I know how I feel about my pioneer ancestors and what they went through and the sacrifices. And I said the other day on this other podcast, you know, you think about the faith that it took for them to do that. And I don't have that faith. I would have been like, I'm out.
Right.
I don't want to give you my property. My grandmother, my four times great grandmother had to give up her property. She didn't. Her husband died. She lost a kid along the trail. I mean, those you had to be thinking at some point like the you know, of those stories of that sacrifice.
When we come back, I want to have you address that.
I knew I would do it.
I was trying to have her look over at me, but you didn't. So, and then I want to ask you a little bit about how true do you believe you were to the story and get a sense of that. We're speaking today with Molly Bonner. He is a filmmaker and a vocal director generally, but he made this great film about Green Flake, who led a journey of 70,000 members of the church across the West and settled what is now Utah. And he was an African-American person who, at least in the film, was larger than life. But at the very least, he was one of the strongest and most courageous people probably ever in the church. We'll have that discussion when we come back. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, speaking today with Molly Bonner, a vocal director and first-time filmmaker whose film Green Flake is a chronicle of Black Mormon pioneers helping lead the journey for members of the LDS Church across the West under just incredible conditions. You always know that the people who moved West at the time when there was literally nothing out here, that they sacrificed so much. Many of them didn't, as you point out in your film, they didn't all make it. And in this case, I don't want to give away the part of this, but these were slaves helping people who in their owners in a lot of this case. And I know Green Flake had this relationship with Brigham Young. There's a couple of things here that I wanted to ask you about. One is, how much of this do you feel like Is there this romanticism with how these characters were developed? Because I had always understood that Brigham Young, you know, as much as he is a huge figure in the church, he had his flaws. And I wanted to know your thoughts on that and how you were able to incorporate his character into the film.
Yeah, so it's so tricky because for me, this film is a little bit different than most, where in a typical film, you'll have a couple of characters and you follow their story the whole way. But we introduce so many different people into the film. And with Brigham Young and Green Flake specifically, I address their relationship. Mm-hmm. And so in the film, when those of you who go on greenflakemovie.com, you get your ticket, you see the film, you'll see that there's a unique depiction of Brigham Young and that relationship to Green Flake. And it's not, what I don't do is address all the stuff that we can Google and read about Brigham Young. That we can find. Mm-hmm. But that unique connection, we don't know about. And so I just wanted to deal with that within the film.
Is the recording of him speaking on Pioneer Day, that's not real?
No.
Oh, darn.
I know, right?
I know. So how much of it is, like, from, how do you know what he said or how he felt?
Yeah, so we do have an account of what he did say on Pioneer Day.
Okay.
And but that's like, we have so little because enslaved members weren't able to give their story. And so we just have little pieces of responses to know what their life was like. When Green Flake was asked, so James Flake, who was Green's enslaver, uh-huh. when he was killed by a mule kicking him in the face, and then someone asked Green, "Are you happy that he got it the way he gave it to you?" And he said, I would hate to imagine that he did. So then that just tells us the type of enslavement that Green endured in mm-hmm. his lifetime. So that little bit allows us to elaborate his life style. Mm-hmm. As an enslaved African American. So there's so little that we do have.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you ask about creative liberties, we have to create the conversations that we don't have, mm-hmm. but at least we know the temperature and the relationships that are created.
Did you know there was, that there were, so there, you know, part of the story is that they are this forward trek where they are laying the groundwork for the saints to follow them to Utah. But one of the men is in shackles.
Yes.
Do you know that there were, so one thing I think is historically accurate is that slaves, or enslaved people who were brought to, you know, with their families, I guess, mm-hmm. They were not well prepared and they were not well cared for, because it was such a hard journey and it was so difficult to even take care of you know, your family. If you had enslaved people, you didn't give them boots. You didn't give them coats. Sorry. And so that was one of Green Flake's concerns was, how do we make this journey care for them as well? Because we know they're going to come from the South. We know they're going to be ill-prepared for this journey. And I thought that was a really profound thought.
Yeah. Well, what we do know is that, you know, there's census where you can see how many enslaved people this family has at this year. And then you can see how many they have when they get to this point, you know, when they get to Utah. And if there's a number of 12 here and they get to Utah and there's 9 and there's no death record, you know, then you have to do the math of how they got free. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's little things like that throughout where you have to fill in the gaps. And, you know, what's interesting about this film is that even though we're dealing with enslaved people, you see that there's different types of people. You know, when we talk about Oscar is one of the enslaved people in the film and him wearing chains. Do we know? I don't know. But what we don't say in the film is that Oscar was badly beaten by his enslavers for trying to run,
mm-hmm.
you know. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that.
And we know that to be a fact.
Right.
That this happened to thousands, maybe more than that.
Yes.
People, right?
So it's
not a stretch. You're not like saying, you know what I think would be a cool way to move this story forward. You took facts that you know about enslavement and that relationship.
Right.
And then bits and pieces from these. The thing that I think is fascinating is I guess I wasn't aware of how many LDS families making that trek had. They owned people. They owned human beings.
Well, this is chattel slavery in America. I mean, this is the South. If you can imagine, you know,
Missouri is the South.
Yeah, they sold everything except for their slave labor. And if anything, they invested into their slave labor to make their way north. So they come here thinking that this is just the way life is for the church, those in the South. Mm-hmm. So if you can imagine what that contention was in the wards when you get there, And you have these Quakers and these enslavers who are in the same ward, in the same elders' quorum. You know,
yeah,
so,
deciding what the direction of their society is going to be, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing I thought was, I guess, really interesting, and I wondered your thoughts on, were you worried at all about making people uncomfortable? I think Elijah Abel's statement summed this up for me. The you don't have to like history, you have to know history.
Yeah.
And he says it a little different, and I'm not going to spoil it for people because they need to hear that themselves. But I wondered your thoughts about making your fellow saints uncomfortable, and also how good people were going to feel to hear this story, black or white or any other color.
Yes.
Because it is just a more complete history of that journey and
yes.
how it happened.
Yes. I wasn't sure. To be honest, I wasn't sure. I knew what I wanted. I know that what my white brothers and sisters want, they want what I want. They just want the truth and all of it.
Mm-hmm.
We all want the same thing, you know, mm-hmm. and I did not know how it would be received. And so after doing these few screenings that I've done, I realized that this is what people desperately wanted. And I'm so happy that I gave it all. And so for those who are thinking, oh, no, I don't want to go watch this slave movie where people are getting beaten and whatever, like, it's not what you think it is.
Yeah.
You just get to learn the stories of these human beings who were LDS and were enslaved and had to endure that. And if there's nothing else, we can draw strength from them.
And also their faith. Like, why did they stay in the church when they were free? Why did they?
Can you imagine? All you know is your families being torn apart from each other. That's all you know. You only know your mother being torn from you, your brother being sent across the country knowing you'll never see them again. And then someone shows up and says, we have a church that can fix all of that. We can reunite your family after this life forever.
Mm-hmm.
That meant more to those enslaved pioneers than any saint. That was everything. So imagine, they're not just trekking across country. They needed this church to survive because of that promise yeah. of family being reunited. They were not able to realize that promise. And that's why this monument needs to be built, because I realized there's nothing for them. After the film was done, I was going to celebrate, take a picture by a monument and be like, hey, we did it. And then I was like, wait, there's nothing? And that was the final piece of the puzzle for me, because I was rushing to get this film done. You know, we did shoot it quickly, and then I went back to being a dad and a husband for a little bit to remind my kids I'm alive, and then came back and finished the film. But I was thinking, I'm going to be rich. It's winning best film in L.A. and London. I'm about to make money. Until that monument, and then I realized what my purpose was. Every penny of profit is going towards building this monument that should have been done a long time ago.
Where do you want the monument to be built?
Well, I'll speak the way I speak. So I don't speak in wants and hopes. I don't even understand that, to be honest.
Okay.
It's going to be on Temple Square, and it's going to be beautiful.
Well, I'd love it on Temple Square. I'd also love something at This Is the Place monument that also captured this.
Yep. So
I'd like three.
Honestly,
I'd like
I haven't talked about it, but there's going to be two monuments, and that's going to be in those two places. And I've been talking with both parties and doing screenings, working my way up in the church, and then This Is the Place. Everyone is excited about it. So you would think, well, why didn't the church? And just imagine that maybe some of them are like us, where they weren't looking at that.
I think this epitomizes why we need diversity in art, why we need diversity everywhere,
yes.
because the stories you think of or that you're motivated or moved or the connection you have with,
yes.
with that, that is why we need diversity in this, in
yes.
media.
Yes.
So listen, we have to stop now, but I'm going to say something. I cannot recommend this film enough. I am not a religious person. Amy knows
everybody
this,
knows.
Right? Everybody knows this. It was so good.
Wow.
I congratulate you. You are obviously a very talented man, and I'm grateful.
This will not be your last film.
I'm grateful that I got a chance to watch it, and Rebecca Kressman, thank you for introducing us.
Yes.
This is
GreenFlakeMovie.com, so please go there. That's where you can get your
screen. And you can buy it?
So basically, that's where you donate to the monument. Your donation is your ticket to watch the film.
Perfect.
GreenFlakeMovie.com. Molly Bonner, thank you so much for joining us today. And I'll tell you, what's interesting to me is I watch it, but I actually may watch it again.
You should.
We'll pay this time.
Right. Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about the show, please contact us via email at vorameed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at adonsports and at jasonlee1. Our show's Twitter handle is at @vorpodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or any place where you find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.